Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on looking at economic reality when we come back. You know, when people call the law school, they oftentimes ask me how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Now, keep in mind that most of these topics that you hear on this show, I teach in detail in one of my schools here at the law school. Now, for example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 A.D. into 49 principles or statutes called dooms, of which 22 were incorporated into our federal Constitution and Bill of Rights. The common law was taken from the Mosaic law given to Moses at Mount Sinai, and that's recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8, and it includes negligence, insurance, and taxes. You know, things like income tax, property tax, and social security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of the Bible, and they work a theft on everybody that participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and social security, and that's the basis of our tax and status school. We owe this income tax and social security tax because we've contracted into these taxes. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for our free general law CD package first? It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Just call and ask. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just send us an email. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine, send your email request. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, now we're talking about looking at economic reality. There are 20 of these economic realities. And the last time we closed out, we were talking about Europe being in meltdown. In 1928, the economy in Great Britain began a meltdown which drugged the rest of the world into the Great Depression. So, in the 1930s Depression, it was Great Britain that started the ball rolling. In this Depression, it was the United States that started the ball rolling. And it started the ball rolling with the failure of the subprime mortgage market. Now, it took 3.5 years the last time to reach bottom. This year, or this time around, it more than likely will take 3.5 years. Now, it began in August of 2007. That's where we reached the peak of the real estate bubble. And then it started down. But if you wanted to put a date on the beginning of the Depression, it was September the 23rd, I believe it was, of 2008, right after the Summer Olympics in Beijing, the very next month, the meltdown began. The markets froze up. And the Secretary of the Treasury, his name was Paulson, Henry Paulson, went to Congress and he said, "Hey, listen, this thing's melting down. We got to do something pretty dramatic." And a company over here, an investment bank called Bear Stearns, went upside down. And so they engineered a bailout of Bear Stearns with a $30 billion bailout, which was paid to J.P. Morgan Chase around September, October, something like that. And that began the hyperinflation. So when we look back at hyperinflation in Germany, it began in 1919 with an inconspicuous event about like the Bear Stearns bailout. And the German government had to take desperate measures in order to keep the ball rolling. That's what Henry Paulson did. He went to Congress and he said, "Hey, look, we got to take desperate measures here. Because if we don't, this thing's going to melt down." Now, everybody wants to prevent this meltdown. Actually, the truth of the matter is, if you want to know what's good for Joe and Sally Housewife, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, let the damn thing melt down. Let's go from the top to the bottom. Let's get it over with. It's like getting a whipping. You know, old dad says, after dinner, we're going to give you a whipping. Now sit down and eat. You're going to sit down and eat dinner knowing that you're getting a whipping after dinner? You're going to sit there and just banter about and talk about, you know, chit-chat and what went on in school today with the old man about to whip you? No, that isn't going to happen. You're sitting there, you can't eat, you're thinking about this whipping that's coming. The best thing to do, let's go get it over with now, and then let's come sit down to eat. That's the best way to do that. Nobody likes to face reality, and so we want to postpone it as long as possible. And so the Germans did the same thing. They wanted to postpone it. They didn't want to face reality. And so from 1919 to November of 1923 was the German hyperinflation, about 4 years. All right, the hyperinflation here in America began with the failure of Bear Stearns. And it starts off slow and easy at first. You're not getting 10% inflation per month, which is the definition of hyperinflation. But there has to be a beginning. There has to be a catalyst. There has to be a reason why this thing begins. And Bear Stearns is going to be the historical beginning. And then it's going to wind its way through with one desperate measure after another until it finally culminates in the total collapse of the dollar, total collapse of the monetary system. Then we'll start over. Now, Germany didn't cease to exist in 1924 when their hyperinflation finally came to an end. The Germans were there in 1914, 24, 34, 44, 54. Hell, they're still there today. And Americans were here in 1914, 24, 34, 44, and we're still here today, and we'll be here tomorrow. We're not going anywhere. But we are going to experience some god-awful changes in our lifestyle. That's the point that I'm making when I say, let's take a look at economic reality. And let's see if we can make the most of it. We're talking about our standard of living. Nothing more, nothing less. And your standard of living is going to be cut in half very shortly. It may be cut by 75%. Because if your standard of living is cut in half, whether it's because you don't have the money to buy the goods or the goods aren't on the shelf or the goods are being rationed, what the hell difference does it make? You ain't got it, have you? So if you're going to have it, then you've got to prepare for it. That's the point I'm making. So let's take a look at this. I said there's 20 things here. 20 events that transpired. Now, I told you about the money changer. Remember the other day I said, or last night I think it was, I said, now there's a third newsletter here called the money changer. I don't want to cut this guy Franklin Sanders short here because I'm looking, I just pulled the paper off the wall. I save all of these newsletters, by the way, from Franklin Sanders. I don't save the privateer and I don't save the forecaster, but all of Franklin Sanders I've got in a pile up here that go back for years. And that's why Sanders now is unique. And in January, he puts out his newsletter once a month. You get about 10 or 11 a year. I've forgotten now. It isn't 12 because he takes a month off. And I don't know what the price is. I don't pay for it, so I have to talk to the wife about that, I guess. But the headline here is Surviving Hyperinflation. and he's got a headline, and he says, hyperinflation is generally defined as prices rising more than 10% a month. It is the worst catastrophe a monetary system in a nation can experience. Now, I got that from Franklin Sanders. That's his headline. I'm sitting here saying that's what I've been reading about all of the hyperinflations that go back in history. It happened in Hungary. It happened in Germany. It happened in China. It happened here in the United States in 1783. We had a hyperinflation here in the United States. The continental currency collapsed. And every historian, every writer that tells you the story about the hyperinflation and about the dislocations and about the unemployment and the poverty and the privation and the shortages of everything, they point to that hyperinflation and say, my God, it's the worst thing that can happen to you. And so it would seem like to me that, you know, if we were pragmatic at all, we would say, if there's one thing we want to avoid, it's hyperinflation. Now, our leaders tell us, no, what you want to avoid is deflation, and what you want is inflation. And so I saw a number yesterday, and they said they want to inflate the American economy by 6% a year for 2 years. Okay, so that's what they're on to. Now, once you get this hyperinflation genie out of the jar, you can't get him back in. The experience of every historical event in the past, by God, once this genie gets out of the jar, you ain't getting him back in. And the genie's out of the jar, and it came out of the jar with the $30 billion that went to J.P. Morgan. That's the genie out of the jar. Then, right after that, came Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG. Now it's Bank of America, Citigroup. There's just no end of it. Now General Motors and Chrysler are getting into it. Pretty soon you're going to have California and various states getting in on the act. Listen, California cannot go bankrupt. We can't allow it. Tain't going to happen. And when push comes to shove, the Treasury of the United States will give Arnold Schwarzenegger and you Californians out there whatever money you need. That's the bottom line. You represent 10% of the gross domestic product of the country. California is so important to the economy. If California by itself were an independent nation, it would be the sixth largest economy on planet Earth. It represents 10% of the gross domestic product of the United States. We represent 1/3 of the gross domestic product of the world. California ain't going broke. They're going into hyperinflation. They're going into privation. They're going to suffer the worst catastrophe that can befall human beings, and that is the collapse of your economy through hyperinflation. That's the worst thing that can happen. That's what's coming. Get ready for it. That's what I wanted to report on. Asia is melting down. If nothing else was going on around us, the fact that Asia is melting down is going to drag the entire world down with it. Now, Europe is melting down, and if nothing else was going on, Europe would drag us down with it. And I brought up the money changer here because the money changer has an article in here every month. Every month I learn something from this guy Sanders. This guy is a great educator also, just like this guy from Australia. And some of it's a little technical. He's got a couple of technical pages in here. You don't need to worry about that. And get off the technical stuff and concentrate on the articles, the two key articles that he publishes every month. And he'll tell you something that you never heard before, something you're going to learn. Hell, I'm an old man, 70 years old. There isn't a time when I don't pick up the money changer and learn something new. I can't remember a money changer I didn't pick up and say, my God, I didn't know that. Let me write that down. This guy's phone number, this is Franklin Sanders now, the money changer. You can probably find it online. His telephone number is 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. I'll give you that number a couple more times before we finish here so that you can get on board with the money changer. If you can squeeze it out at all, then I would advise you get a hold of Franklin Sanders and subscribe to that Money Changer publication. In 1928, it was England that started the Great Depression. In this round, it's the United States of America with our subprime real estate. Now, we Americans have a total debt of $150 trillion, and we're not going to default on that $150 trillion. Joe Sixpack, you're going to default on your share. America's not going to default on it. What we're going to do is we're just going to print the money and pay it, which is the equivalent of. So when you're listening to default, how did the default come? Normally, when we default, we don't pay the bank their payment, and they come in and they take our property away. You don't pay your house payment, they come take your house. That's the normal way. Okay, but governments don't go bankrupt that way. Governments, they don't work like that. So when we default, China is not going to come here to the United States and take our house. There's an equivalent to it, but it isn't going to work quite that way. Now, the Japanese are going to make a deal with the Russians. See, after World War II, the Soviet Union occupied four northern islands, took over part of their real estate, and the Japs want it back. And they're going to get it back. And they're going to buy it and pay for it. And they're probably going to pay 10 times more than the real estate is worth. But that's a part and parcel with sovereignty, see. And so the Japanese want their islands back, and they're going to pay 10 times more than the real estate is worth, but they're going to do it in a real estate or an economic transaction with the Soviet Union. They're going to get their islands back, and the Japs are going to furnish machine tools or something to buy them back. And it'll be done under the guise of a trade treaty. There'll be some kind of trade involved here, see. And that's the way that game is played. So when governments go bankrupt, like when we default on that $1 trillion, well, the result will be war. The Chinese are not going to take a $1 trillion hit without getting even. So there will be some other kind of deal come down. So the United States government will say, well, we'll furnish you with copper or iron, or we'll sell you this concession in the national wilderness area, or. See? Something on that order will come down. Or we'll agree to pay you this or that or something else in the form of some new trade agreement, some new this or that. And it will be disadvantageous to us and advantageous to the Chinese. Meanwhile, back on the farm, all of you old people out there drawing Social Security, what will happen is the government will keep sending you your Social Security checks. And your Social Security checks will buy less and less and less because the inflation rate's going to go up by 10% a month. So if it goes up, let's just try it this way. Let's suppose that you got a $1,000 check coming in. And let's suppose that the prices of all goods and services go up by 10%. So what they'll do is they'll send you your $1,000 check, and you'll get $900 worth of goods compared to the month before. So you'll get a 10% hit. You'll have 10% less pinto beans to eat, but you'll get the same number of dollars. Now, they've got another neat ruse that they use to screw you, and here's what it is. While the inflation rate is going up by 10% a month, they will give you a cost of living escalator increase in your Social Security benefits by about 3 or 4% a month. Now, the cost of living escalator has been running around 3.4% a year for the last 3 or 4 years. And so they give you a 3.4% increase in your Social Security check while prices are going up by 10 or 12% a year. So you're taking it in the shorts by about 10% a year. Now, just picture this when you're taking it in the shorts by 10% a month, because that's what's coming. Get ready for it. Now, I know somebody's going to write me a letter and say, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Well, I don't know what you're going to do. So save the time, effort, and energy. If you can't figure out for yourself what it is you're going to do, well, then it probably can't be figured out, because I'm not going to do it for you. I don't have enough time to sit down with all you people out there and solve each and every one of your problems. Now, there are certain basic principles that go on in life. You know, life is full of all kinds of uncertainties. There's all kinds of things that happen. And when things have happened in the past, we can just about plan on them happening again in the future. So when we look at the hyperinflation in Germany, which is the classic of the 20th century, and when we do all the same things that the Germans did, then we can expect exactly the same results that the Germans got. That makes sense. You know, when you're flying airplanes, when the airplane reaches flying speed, it leaves the ground. And until it reaches flying speed, it doesn't leave the ground. So if we got an airplane, flying speed, let's say, or stalling speed is 100 miles an hour, when that thing gets to going about 120, 30, 40 miles an hour, boys and girls, you can't hold that thing on the ground. You can't keep it on the ground. And when this hyperinflation takes off, you're not going to get that genie back in the jar, and you're not going to hold that thing under control. Now, it's already out of the jar. We're not getting 10% per month. It's going to take you 2 or 3 years. See, in Germany, it took from 1929 to its peak in November of 1923. Hell, we're talking about 5 years here, aren't we? All right, they let the genie out of the jar in September of 2008. Oh, 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13. Now, it can work faster than that. In Brazil, they had hyperinflation take over in 3 days. 72 hours. But in Germany, it took several years to get the thing underway. So, you know, don't write me a letter now and say to me, well, is it going to be 3 days or 3 years? I don't know. Hell, I'm not a prophet. I know it's coming. And as Buckler said in his paper here the other day, he said America is living week to week waiting for the shoe to fall. Is it going to be this week or next week or the week after or 3 months from now? I don't know. But you can plan on it and take it to the bank. So in 1928, it was England that started the thing. Now, we were talking about this thing, I think, a night or two ago, where the economy of the world is $44 trillion, and there's $1 trillion left over to lend. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that the world cannot fund America's $2 billion a day deficit. Now, a trillion is 1,000 billion. So you take 365 days in a year times $2 billion a day, that's $730 billion a year. Boys and girls, we're already borrowing nearly all the money that there is to lend worldwide. Just America alone is borrowing that much. And so far, the Chinese and Germans and Japanese have been funding that debt. Now our president has doubled that. Maybe even tripled it. I haven't seen any reliable numbers here recently, but I know it's $2 billion a day. And the president now says, we gotta go $2 trillion in debt. That's how much so far in calendar year 2009. First 8 months of the year, we've already consumed $2 trillion. That's double all the money that's available in the world to borrow. We've already done that in 8 months. Now there's 4 more months to go in fiscal 2008. My presumption would be, if we've already eaten up $2 trillion in 8 months, don't you think we'll probably eat up $1 more trillion in the next 4 months? And that's what prompted Buckler to say, look, we're in fantasy land here. I mean, if we believe that we're just going to go out here and borrow this money and spend it and revive our economy, we've got our heads up our dear ears. That's what the bottom line to that is. That isn't going to happen. So let's wake up and smell the coffee. Now, they can do this. These crazy events that we see going on every night on the 6 o'clock news, as Brian Williams is reporting, they're actually happening. But there's going to be an outcome that comes from that. You see, the Chinese are not stupid people. I mean, they look funny to us. You know, you Chinese people over there, you know, when we're looking at you, God, you people really look funny. I imagine when you look at us, you must be saying, oh, God, those Yankees look funny. But, you know, if we're over here in America thinking these Chinese people now are going to take it in the shorts for $1 trillion, and they're just going to smile and say, ha-so, ha-so, you know, we're going to take it in the shorts for $1 trillion, yeah, I think we got another guest coming over here. That's the stuff of war. That's the stuff that gets people really upset and gets them upset in a hurry. You stiff somebody for $1 trillion now, and you see how fast those people start dropping nukes on you. So you can put that out of your mind. The Chinese over there are going to say, hey, wait a minute. Now, we're devaluing our money, and as we devalue our money, then that $1 trillion that they have is going to buy less. When they took those notes over there, they thought they were going to get so many loaves of bread. And they expect to get paid those loaves of bread, and we don't have the bread to pay them. Now, there's two numbers here. The government gives us these hedonic numbers, and then there's the reality numbers. Now, there's an outfit out here called shadowstats.com. You ought to write that down. Shadowstats.com. They're referred to quite often in the Magombo Guru newsletter, Nadler's newsletter, Kitco. Write this down. Kitco.com. Kitco. KITCO.com. They have a number of free newsletters and excerpts from newsletters. Doesn't cost you anything. You won't get a whole lot, but you'll get some. And a little bit's better than nothing. And whatever you get off of Kitco that's totally irrelevant and incompetent is 10 times more hard news than you're going to get off of CBS, NBC, or ABC. The crumbs that fall off of the Kitco table will make a better meal for you than anything you're going to get off of mainstream news. So write down the Kitco website, kitco.com, and then start looking for Nadler and Magombo. And there's a number of others, you know, like Sexana and others, who will tell you a little bit more of the answer. And the numbers that the government is giving us are bogus, bogus numbers. But they're not all bogus. That's what our problem is. See, they tell us the truth some of the time, lie to us some of the time, and keep us deceived all the time. And so wading through all these numbers over here is the job of these newsletter writers and shadowstats.com, and they come back and say, wait a minute, the government's lying to us on that. Or, nope, that's correct. The government ain't lying to you there. They're telling you the truth. But watch out for those numbers. Those numbers are phony. Now, they're telling us about recession versus depression. And the only words that you're hearing out of mainstream is recession. They don't want to talk about depression. We've already passed the depression threshold on unemployment. It's 15%. When you get out to 15% and beyond, that's depression territory. We've already exceeded that. Now, when you're talking about these bailouts over here and all this money that's being bought and spent, okay, we're already beyond the depression level when it comes to our debt. We have a total of $150 trillion of debt, we Americans. That's what we owe on our houses. That's what we owe in our unfunded government liabilities and our funded government liabilities, our credit card debt. All the debts that we owe is around $150 trillion. All right, now, I didn't tell you about the derivatives yet, but I'm going to. Derivatives. Derivatives are bets. Those are insurance contracts. And let's just take an example. Let's suppose, for example, you bought some U.S. Treasury bonds, and now you found out that the Treasury isn't as good a credit risk as McDonald's, and so you want to buy insurance. That's called a derivative. So you go to AIG, which is now 80% owned by the United States government, and you want to buy insurance in case these bonds go bad, which they are going to go bad, the insurance company will come in and pay you for those. That's called derivatives. All right, how much is out there? Get this, there is $1,000 trillion worth of them out there. They're unregulated. We don't really know if it's a quadrillion or two quadrillion or if it's a half a quadrillion, but it's a bunch. And some of the best estimates, you know, I see numbers out there, 500, 1,000 to $2,000 trillion worth of derivatives. Okay. The reason that the federal government had to go in and bail out AIG, and there was just no two ways about it, was because AIG had issued a lot of these derivatives guaranteeing the bonds of places like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. Now, when Lehman Brothers went upside down, AIG had to pay off on those bonds, and AIG didn't have the money. See how simple that was? And so then after Lehman Brothers went upside down, then all of a sudden they looked around and they said, oh my God, AIG is going to go upside down. And if they go upside down, they take down the world's economy with them. So they said, well, that can't happen. They're too big to fail. So the federal government jumps in there and says, okay, now we're going to guarantee the AIG contracts on derivatives. Now, this is the United States government, which is already bankrupt, $150 trillion in the hole. Government's $100 trillion in the hole, then add $50 trillion more for the rest of us guys. Now, wait a minute. If all of us guys have a $50 trillion debt, and then we're supposed to guarantee the government's $100 trillion debt, and then the government goes out and borrows $30 trillion to stimulate the economy, does anybody out there start to get the picture here? This is why the privateer is using terms like fantasy land. You got a guy that's homeless living in a tent down along the railroad tracks, and he says, I think I'll go down to the bank today and borrow $50,000 so I can speculate in stocks. You're going to what? You're going to what? A homeless guy living in a tent by the railroad tracks is going down to the bank and borrow $50,000 to speculate in stocks. And the people of the United States of America, the taxpayers that are already in hock $50 trillion and can't pay their debts, are going to guarantee $100 trillion worth of debts from a government that produces nothing and consumes much? Huh? And is borrowing $2 billion a day, which has now jumped up to at least $4, maybe $6 billion a day, which is more money out there, kids, than the whole world economy has to lend. And that's just us. And that's assuming that the Germans aren't going to borrow any money and spend any money for themselves, or the Chinese and Japanese and everybody else. So that isn't going to happen. So then monetization then is the next step. Monetization. Can you say monetization, boys and girls? Hey, listen to this. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4900. 67. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans in their viewpoints, may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are looking at economic reality. Now let's turn over here to page 6 of The Privateer. Now remember, The Privateer is available at www.the-privateer.com. That's www.the-privateer.com. Now I have zeroed in on The Privateer because he's educational, and he hits the nail on the head. And not to detract now from other good newsletter writers and Kitco and the rest of them, here's page 6. He says, U.S. retail sales were down nearly 11% in March from the same month in 2008. That's according to government data. The U.S. jobless rate has risen to 8.9%, which is the highest in more than a quarter of a century. And the Labor Department said on May 9th, U.S. State tax revenues have fallen by nearly 13% as a result of all of this. Okay, let's pause here and think about that. As this economic collapse progresses, more and more people lose their jobs. As these people lose their jobs, they pay less and less tax. So there's less and less tax revenue for state and local governments to spend on supporting these people who are newly unemployed, drawing unemployment insurance and food stamps and workman's compensation or whatever else these welfare benefits are. So it's like a snowball that you put down in the snow, and as you roll it, it gets bigger and bigger. It's that snowball effect. It's an avalanche. As this avalanche starts out, it's very small. But as it goes down the mountain, it picks up more and more snow and it gets bigger and bigger. Now, once this depression gets started, which it has already started, it's going to get bigger and bigger. There's no way to stop it. No way to stop it. Now, I know that the public officials say that that's what we're going to do. That's our stated goal. We are not going to rest until we stop this worldwide deflation, but it's never been done in the past. You have never had a depression for the last 5,000 years that anybody ever stopped. Once the genie gets out of the jar, it's going to run its course. The avalanche stops. All avalanches stop. There's no such thing as an avalanche that goes on forever. There's no depression that goes on forever. But there are avalanches that get bigger and bigger, and they get bigger and bigger until they finally reach the bottom, and then they terminate. They stop. And depressions do the same thing. They reach critical mass, and then they stop. Bubonic plague. When it comes, it reaches critical mass, and then it stops. We don't know why. We don't know how, but it does. All right, so the depression is going to stop, but it's already started, and you're not going to put that genie back in the jar. If you think you can stick with the program, you're on your way. Now, for the rest of us over here, what I did was I got off I got off the boat here. And I'm sitting here on the shore watching you guys bail water. Now, I wish you the best. I hope you can bail all this water out of your boat and keep it from sinking. But in the past, you know, the survivors got off the boat. The boat's going to sink, and that's going to be a total loss. This economy's going to sink, and it's going to be a total loss. Out of this economy will come something different. Now, the New World Order people think that they're going to loot, rape, rob, and pillage, and they're going to start a new economic system in a new world order when this anarchy and chaos reaches its culmination, probably around 2015 sometime, or maybe 2018 or 20. We don't know exactly how long this is going to go on, but, you know, it's sometime out here in the future, and that's what their plan is. Now, meanwhile, that's a lot of tough sledding for the rest of us, and I want to see if I can't ease up on this tough sledding and make it a little easier on myself. So that's why I say I think maybe if we made a few plans for ourselves now before the ship sinks, maybe it would help us in the future. Now, the U.S. government is using what is called the U3 to measure unemployment. The older U6 method reveals a far worse scenario. But using the U3 measurement, real unemployment has reached 15.8% in April. Okay, you got that number down? We talked about unemployment here the other day. If we use the U6 measurement, it's at 19.2. U3 has it at 15. What do you say here? 15.8. Now look, the classic definition for depression is 15%. When unemployment reaches 15%, you're in depression territory. All right, now we've reached that plus, so we're in depression territory here in the United States. Now in Spain, you people have reached 20%. In Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, you're up over 20%. The gross domestic product here in the United States is contracting at 22% a year, 30% a year in the European common market. I don't have a number for Asia. The Chinese are still growing. Last time I saw a number, the Chinese economy is still growing at 6%. And that's because the rest of us are still getting our shoes and big screen TVs and I don't know how much of our food's coming from China, but some. And the Chinese are still selling to us. Now, they were growing at 10, 11, 12% a year, and so their growth now has been cut in half. They're suffering. But instead of growing 12% a year, they're only growing 6. And we Americans over here, instead of growing 6% or 2%, we're actually contracting, and our contraction now is at the rate of 22% per annum. Boy, that's scary, scary territory there, kids. Now, watching the smaller U.S. governments go broke in the process, the U.S. economy is diving right out from under its political entities, starting from the federal government and moving to the states, cities, municipalities, and districts. Their taxation base is disappearing, and that's tearing their budgets apart. Furloughs, working 3 or less days a week out of 5, working part-time, have become the near norm for many so-called public servants. At the same time, spending explodes as calls for emergency social assistance expands, and the budgets cannot handle this, and bankruptcies are looming. Now, California, I said, isn't going to go bankrupt because the feds are going to come in and bail them out. But now watch out. When California gets their bailout money, well, then the other states like Illinois and Florida and whatever other states are in dire straits, they're going to be coming to Washington. And just like Bear Stearns, we can bail them out, but we can't bail them all out. So then Lehman Brothers is going to have to be let go, and they did. And then all of a sudden they woke up and said, oh my God, now we've got to bail out AIG because AIG has got all these derivatives on all this Lehman Brothers stock, and so therefore, see where the snowball goes? And as the snowball grows in size, it turns into an avalanche. And pretty soon there will be too many states needing too much money, and they won't be able to service their debt. Now we have bankruptcy defaults. Now, when states issue bonds, like California issues bonds. Insurance companies buy those bonds. So insurance companies and labor unions and stock portfolio managers and people with 401k plans, you know, just Joe Sixpacks just like you and me, we go out and we buy those tax-exempt bonds and we put them in our 401k plans, don't we, for our retirement so we can drive around in our Winnebagos. Now, what happens if you've got a bunch of these bonds? Let's just pick some bonds here. Let's say you've got some state of Illinois municipal bonds. And now, you know, these municipal corporations, you lost your job, so you ain't paying taxes. And so now you're not paying taxes. And so now the state can't service its debt, so they're going to default on the bonds. And these are the bonds that you have in your 401k for your retirement. Can you see that snowballing effect? And that's what's happened. And that genie is already out of the jar. Now the stock market, this is the Dow Jones Industrials, are going to bottom out wherever their bottom is at somewhere around 3,800. If they go down 89%, let's just take 14,160, which is the top of the market. And then let's just go times 0.89. They're going to lose 12,602 points. 12,602 is the loss. So far, they've only lost about half that, about 6,000 points. Let's put it another way. 14,160 times 0.11. That means that the Dow Jones Industrial Average will bottom out at 1,557.6. From 14,000 to 1,500, that's quite a drop. Now watch what happens. The people that buy these stocks, you know, the hedge funds and 401k guys like me and you and others, these people buy those stocks. And then these labor unions and these pension funds and the people that have this money and have bought these stocks when they were at 14,000, 13,000, 12,000, 11,000, 9,000, 8,000, 7,000, and here it is at 8,000 right now. And it drops to 7,000, then to 6,000, then to 4,000, 3,000, and then 2,000. They're losing money in the pension funds. And so now these pension funds that you people out there are retired on. Let's suppose that you were an electrician all of your life, and the National Association of Electrical Workers has your pension fund, and they've invested that in some big derivatives firm, who in turn bought municipal bonds, which in turn now default. What is that going to do for your pension? That check that you rely upon every month from your pension fund. They're going to default on them. They're not going to send them to you. That's what bankruptcy is all about. Now, there's a lot of that going on right now. We haven't reached the critical mass stage, but it's coming. And it's coming because the snow is already halfway down the mountain. And you can't stop the landslide of snow halfway down the mountain. We can stop it down in the valley. When it reaches the valley, it's got no place else to go, so it's going to stop down there. But it isn't going to stop halfway up the mountainside. And nobody's ever stopped one yet. They aren't stopping them now, and they're not likely to stop them in the future. And that's where these depressions are. Now, once the thing gets started, it gets out of control. And it started with Bear Stearns. And well, Bear Stearns started with the subprime housing market. Well, shucks, the subprime housing market started with the making of these crazy loans to start with. I mean, you know, we can go back and blame Bob, who blames Bill, who blames Tom or John or David or somebody else. But the bottom line is, here's where we're at today. Like it or lump it, here's where we're at. And the smaller governments are going broke and bankruptcies loom. Now, what's that going to do for you? Now, the shrinking U.S. civil economy comes into play here. U.S. factory payrolls fell by 149,000 in April. The decline included a fall of 29,000 jobs in auto manufacturing and parts industries. The housing sector, payrolls at builders fell 110,000, and financial firms cut payrolls by 40,000. The service sector of the economy is the biggest sector in the economy now, and it lost 269,000 jobs in April. You know, this is a full-scale employment cave-in, and it's still going on. Let's underline that. Full-scale employment cave-in. Now, the truth is hiding in the open. It's a depression. Bankruptcies loom. We're in a full-scale employment cave-in. This is a true and dramatic disconnect from reality and increasing the danger of a vast U.S. debt default. A vast U.S. debt default. Now, we normally think of that in terms of, well, government is going to default on its debt. Yep, that's what that is. That's what's coming. That will collapse the economy. That's what happened in 1783. That will make your dollars worth a zero. That will make your 401k with $100,000 in it today worth a zero when the dollar collapses. Is it going to collapse? Absolutely. Most assuredly. No doubt. Is that good news? No. Nobody likes to hear that, but then that's where economic reality is located. Now, what are you going to do about that? How are you going to solve that problem for yourself, your wife, your kids, and so on? Now there's more. More. To even slow down this huge drop in employment will take a massive fall in wages and salaries so that the economic costs of employing people can again reconnect to the descending U.S. price mechanism. Now, while the U.S. price mechanism is going down, your wages will have to go down in proportion to the price decreases. Now, when was the last time you had a meeting at your local union hall to discuss cutting wages and benefits? Hell, that's not going to happen. It is true that there is some forced wage concessions by the United Auto Workers because General Motors and Chrysler are going broke. And the wage scale at these two American auto companies is higher than their competitors, Toyota and Datsun. So in order for the U.S. car industry to compete, they're going to have to cut wages. Well, now listen, boys and girls, that isn't just the auto workers, that's all the rest of us. Because if you're going to cut prices, if you're going to cut the value of houses and cut the value of stocks and bonds and automobiles and everything, then the price of wages has to go down. And everybody is going to resist wage reductions. They're going to resist price increases and resist deflation. Instead of letting the free marketplace, which we talked about last week, do its thing, we're going to interfere in the free marketplace and we're going to fix all of its errors and perceived mistakes. And as a result of that, we're going to get a response. We're going to get a conclusion. Something's going to happen from that. So we're going to drag this thing out for years and years. We're going to hold it up and keep the agony going for as long as possible because we don't want to face reality and because we're in denial. Now, that's what the bottom line to all of this is. Everybody's in denial, and we're going to work real hard here with our government officials to prevent this deflation. The truth of the matter is deflation is the best thing ever happened to us. Let's start thinking about it in pragmatic terms. Do you remember when the price of gas went from $1 to $2 and $2 to $3 and $3 to $4? Remember how tough that was and how bad that was and how you had to cut back on your driving? Then the price went from $4 to $3 to $2. Do you remember that? And at the bottom here, it went to $1.43. It went from $4 a gallon to $1.43 here in the Ozarks. Now I saw the other day the price of gas was back up to $2.19. And it'll continue to escalate until it hits $4, $5, $8, $12, $15. Now, at the very same time that this gasoline is going back up in price, are our wages going up with it? No. Did our wages go down with it? No. We like it when our wages stay static and the prices decline, don't we? The deflation of gasoline from $4 to $2 a gallon was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. What the hell's wrong with that? Deflation's good for me and you, Joe. Tain't good for the oil companies. Tain't good for the Arab sheiks. Tain't good for Saudi Arabia. Tain't good for ExxonMobil. By God, Joe, you should be real concerned about ExxonMobil and the Arab oil sheiks. And let's get the price of gasoline back up to $4 a gallon, huh? Has it ever occurred to us that maybe this deflation, if we just leave things alone, let the market take over, the marketplace would bring wages and gasoline and pinto beans down to a price. Somewhere along the line, there'd be a price. And then we can go from there. And if you get to the real price, which is what we call in economics the clearing price, you got to get to that clearing price. And then we can go back up. But until we get to the clearing price, we're just going to bounce along here from day to day and week to week and month to month. Things are going to get progressively worse. Nothing's going to get better. Now, these U.S. entitlement programs have now reached a mind-numbing $63 trillion unfunded liability over the long term. To that can be added, of course, the federal government's funded debt, which is nearing $12 trillion, and then set to exceed that total in the second half of the year. Then there is this year's $2 trillion budget deficits. This is true and dramatic disconnect from reality. That's the way Buckler puts it. He uses these terms. He says, the truth is hiding in the open. It's a depression. Bankruptcies loom. Full-scale employment cave-in is still going on. This is a true and dramatic disconnect from reality and increasing the danger of a vast U.S. debt default. And the U.S. is literally weak by week, living on borrowed time. That is genuine depression territory. The alarm bells are getting loud, and there's an epic-making U.S. financial debacle ahead of us. Now, those are some pretty damn important statements that's coming out of the privateer, which I should give you an update here. Be sure you get a web page address here. It's the-privateer.com. The other one over here is theinternationalforecaster.com. And then Franklin Sanders. I don't know if he's got a web page or not. He probably does, but it'd be called the Money Changer, more than likely, .com. But he's got a phone number here. It's 888-218-9226. Now, that's called the Money Changer. It's 888-218-9226. And with that, I'm going to have to close out for this program and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.